On the same week that the New York Times reported he gave up a lavish private office for a 6-foot by 7-foot cube in an open plan office, Hachette CEO Michael Peach announced conclusion of an ebook sales deal with Amazon. He says the deal is great news for writers, but he also says he doesn't miss his office. Welcome to Copyright Clearance on his podcast series. I'm Christopher Keneally for Beyond the Book. Yesterday, November 13th, Amazon and Hachette both offered glowing assessments of their new working arrangement, and Andrew Albanese, Publishers Weekly senior writer, has the latest, hottest details. Welcome back, Andrew.
Hey there, Chris.
Well, it's Friday, and we get to talk about Amazon and Hachette at least one more time. Well, probably for a lot longer than just this week. And obviously, the big news is they have a deal. You've said all along that the terms would be confidential. Indeed, they are. And that everybody would be thrilled to be back in business together. But I guess you're not surprised then.
Well, I'm shocked, of course. You know, as you know, we've been talking about this from the outset on this program, and what we knew would happen has indeed happened. Amazon and Hachette have struck a deal, and because that's what happens in negotiations, right? You eventually come to terms. Of course, now all we're allowed to know is that this is a multi-year deal for both print and ebooks, just like Simon & Schuster's recent deal was, and everyone, I guess, is really, really happy. Hachette CEO Michael Peach said the deal was great news for writers, as you noted, and also that it gives Hachette enormous marketing capability with one of their most important bookselling partners. An Amazon official said the deal offers financial incentives for Hachette to deliver lower prices. And what exactly that all means, we don't know. And, you know, what really happened over the last 6 months while we were negotiating this deal out and contentious fashion and often in public, that's also a mystery, and apparently we'll never know that either.
Well, you can certainly help straighten out in our minds what this public battle has meant to the book business over the last few months. It really has drawn out really strong opinions on all sides.
Yeah, what happens now is really the question. But, you know, frankly, I don't actually care all that much about knowing the actual terms of this contract, because soon enough, we're going to see how this contract plays out on things like quarterly earnings statements. And we can also start to track prices on Amazon, so we'll know what the price situation looks like. And also, I'm sure we'll hear some complaints or some happy thoughts from authors as they start getting the royalty statements. So really, the ebook market is still so young, and it's still evolving, you know, and it's especially as we now begin to put the 2012 DOJ price-fixing sanctions in their rearview mirror. I actually think, and I have thought, that it's really the next round of negotiations after this one is when we'll really start to get a sense of how the ebook future is shaping up. But with the Hachette public dispute finally over, with the contract struck, I think now is time for readers to be really concerned. You know, the publicity that this dispute attracted, while I often think it was misplaced, could have been very useful. But now that it's all peace, love, and non-disclosures, well, I think it's a little dangerous. You know, as you know, I've been quite frustrated by some of the coverage of this negotiation, because from the outset, it's been pitched by the media and, you know, occasionally supporters on both sides as this sort of high-stakes battle for the future of the book. But it isn't, and it never was. It's always been a negotiation. It's always been a PR campaign by two negotiating partners that sort of was masquerading as this debate. And for all the people who are waving the flag for Hachette and urging them to stand tall in this fight, you know, where are they now? Does the Authors Guild and Authors United still want the Department of Justice to investigate Amazon now that at least two of the big five publishers have struck new deals? There may be more out there. We know other publishers are negotiating. Now we have Michael Peach from Hachette saying that Amazon is their most important bookselling partner. You know, do they still want to go ahead and try to get the government to tear Amazon's house down? You know, I wouldn't think so. And after the last few years spent answering DOJ questions about their ebook publishing businesses, I think the last thing publishers want is the DOJ to start messing with their biggest account. You know, but here's what really troubles me, because the business dispute is now over. We still need to have this serious, informed public conversation about the future of books and about publishing in the digital age. You know, how do writers get paid? How do readers get access? How do libraries function? What about privacy and data collection? What about DRM? CRM and this complex mess of proprietary platforms now emerging, especially in the self-publishing market? What about long-term access to published works, like printed books on good old deacidified paper? They can last for 100 years. You put them on your shelf, you know they're there. You can give them to your friends and family. But books that live in the ether, they can disappear. They can change without anyone knowing. And of course, we still need to talk about the elephant in the room, which is Amazon. And we need to have that conversation in a much broader way, as the New Republic's Franklin Foer so eloquently argued in his cover story a few weeks ago. So, you know, the debate we've had about the future of the book, so far it's been driven by these big corporations. It's been largely about price. It's been about monopoly and who gets what cut. And I really do fear, now that we have this deal between Hachette and Amazon, that discussion is going to go away now that this private discussion has kicked in. And to me, that's the most troubling aspect, because if you accept that the future of reading is digital, and I do, then I'm not exaggerating when I say that that future is being decided by these big corporations behind closed doors. And not only do we not have a seat at the table, these non-disclosure agreements are forbidding us from knowing exactly what terms books are being bought and sold on. So my hope is that this very quiet end to the very loud Amazon Hachette battle will not satisfy readers, that will actually open readers' eyes to the limits of the regulatory approach, to the limits of the debate about price and monopoly, and to the need to have a broader conversation about our digital reading and digital publishing future.
Well, you mentioned Franklin Foer, who's the editor-in-chief at the New Republic, and he'll be joining us in a conversation next Sunday at the Miami Book Fair. And along with us and Franklin will be Oren Teacher of the American Booksellers Association and author-musician Astra Taylor. And I expect that discussion is going to be quite animated and will probably draw a good crowd.
Yeah, I would imagine so. And I think now with this news, probably even more so. You know, Franklin, in his piece in the New York Times, in the New Republic, cited Tim Wu's 2010 book, The Master Switch, which is about monopolies. And it's funny because I was working on a piece citing that very book as well. And because I interviewed Wu in 2010 when the book came out, and it is amazing how much Tim Wu presaged this current battle with Amazon and Hachette. Not exactly, but in broader terms. In his book, Wu writes about AT&T and the beginning of monopolies, and he noted that monopolies almost always start out doing good things, and they can go on to do really good things for a number of years. But soon enough, they become invested in protecting their monopolies over than innovating and providing services to their customers. And I think that's a spot-on analysis, and it's one that really applies to both sides of this Amazon Hachette discussion. Because on the publisher side, you know, we've been discussing the issue of consolidation for decades. You know, we've seen the number of publishers shrink down to five majors, representing 50% of the bestseller list, and one publisher, Penguin Random House, now controlling 50% of the list, five majors representing 90% of the bestseller list. On the book-selling side, we've watched our vibrant network of indie bookstores plummet with the rise of the large chains. And then you have to ask yourself where the ebook market would be today if it was left to the five major publishers to hash out. Certainly, there wouldn't be a lot of innovation. There wasn't a lot of innovation before, even though I think they are innovating a lot more these days. But you can see that their concern all along has been more about protecting their existing channels. And as for Amazon, you know, the publishers, as I said before, have essentially outsourced innovation to them. So they invested the money, took the time and risk to pioneer this commercial ebook platform. But we should be rightly concerned about how Amazon is going to seek to lock down its market dominance going forward. You know, in his interview with me in 2010, Wu made a great point, and I think we should keep this in mind. In the digital world, a regulatory approach to monopolies can only take you so far. They're very difficult to press, and they're limited in what they can do. What we need in the digital age is a constitutional approach. And the question is, what does a constitutional approach to monopolies look like? And I don't know, but I can tell you this. It probably does not involve non-disclosure agreements.
Well, indeed, but you never know with the Roberts Court, so we could find ourselves there. Andrew Albanese, senior writer at Publishers Weekly, thanks for joining us on Beyond the Book, and we'll see you in Miami next week.
I look forward to it, and my pleasure as always.
Beyond the Book is produced by Copyright Clearance Center, a global rights broker for the world's most sought-after materials, including millions of books and ebooks, journals, newspapers, magazines, and blogs. You can follow Beyond the Book on Twitter, find us on Facebook, and subscribe to the free podcast series on iTunes or at our website, beyondthebook.com. Our engineer and co-producer is Jeremy Brisky of Burst Marketing. My name is Christopher Keneally. For all of us at Copyright Clearance Center, thanks for listening to Beyond the Book.